If your church gets struck by lightning twice, you instantly have to go from priest to prostitute. The priest to prostitute pipeline is really, really direct.
Jeffrey Bezos thinks he's special, but he's not the first billionaire in space. It was William Wonka.
You're supposed to be around fish. Those are like rats, but they swim.
You're just really gonna let me sit in that joke, huh?
And I hate you, and I hate this podcast.
I'm about to say maybe the most controversial thing I've ever said.
What does he look like under me?
Good evening, and welcome to Genre Blind. That's not my line. I was doing it without looking at the thing, and here we are.
And good, genre blind.
I'm not gonna stop the recording, I'm just gonna...
No, we're doing it, yeah.
Good evening to only those who know that there is an inaccessible valley up in Canada where many people have been found sans their heads, and we just don't know why.
Welcome to Genre Blind, a podcast where we break down the cliches that make pop culture spicy.
Every episode, we use the random trope feature on TV Tropes to spark discussions about the media therein.
You are contractually obligated to phrase all questions or comments in the form of a compliment. This is a swearing podcast. We both have degrees, and you're just going to have to trust us on this. His name is Diggs Brown.
And her name is Annalie Tominelli. And this is Genre Blind. Programming note, we're not here to hate on tropes. We're here to make you love them.
What? Heads?
Yeah.
In the desert?
No, there's like a valley, mm-hmm. and it's inaccessible except via like really hard travel or like helicopters or whatever. Mm-hmm. And pretty much everyone who goes there and spends a significant amount of time there looking for gold, because there's like a fuck ton of gold there,
gets their heads removed.
Ends up just a corpse with no head, or completely like burnt up and all of their stuff burnt up, but they look like they were just sitting there calmly the whole time.
Oh, well, that must have been that's my house, probably.
Oh, shit. Well, you should have told me that before I made it the fact. Now everyone knows where you live.
Well, that's fine. I do have a lot of gold, and you're welcome to stop by.
But am I allowed to have an extended stay?
No, I don't like people very much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is when people start overstaying their welcome. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Gotcha.
Yeah. There are also phone booths out in the desert.
Yeah, there sure are.
Random phone booths. Ugh. Just sitting places.
Things
thinking
where
about
there
those.
Shouldn't be things are good.
Imagine pirate ship in desert. Love that image.
Well, you're in luck because the first trope is cool airship. So I raise you pirate ship in sky.
Pirate ship in sky. Arguably more interesting than pirate ship on ground.
Yeah, because pirate ships do go on ground sometimes. Sometimes they do a bad job at being boats and they go right onto the sand.
They go on ground.
And then some sort of ghost of a woman whose child inexplicably died appears on the cliffside.
Yeah, exactly. Have you ever heard her speak, that woman?
Yeah, I'm from Oregon.
Yeah, I was gonna say she comes down and says, hey.
Where's my boy?
Listen, this is a boat. You're supposed to be out there on the sea.
Why are you
on my cliffside?
You see that? That's a rat. You're supposed to be around fish.
You're supposed to be around fish. Those are like rats, but they swim.
Wet rat.
Now you gotta turn your little keisters round and go back towards the lighthouse over yonder.
Also, I lost my boy.
Also, I lost my boy.
But I don't want your help. I want you to go back out to sea.
Listen, I want to find my boy. I don't want you to find my boy. So I'm gonna need you to turn your ship around and just make sure there are no boys on board.
No boys on this ship. That's just a large rat.
That's just large rat.
I thought that was my boy.
It's the fish of the land, that large rat.
Yeah.
So airships have no problem with fish nor rats, but they do run into a lot of pigeon issues.
Yes, pigeon issues, all sorts of winged beast. So basically, just to clarify, we're talking about airships that are in the air. So anything from like hot air balloons to ships like the Hindenburg to like sky mm-hmm. pirates, mm-hmm. anything like that. Steampunk stuff, Treasure mm-hmm, Planet mm-hmm, stuff.
Mm-hmm. Bioshock Infinite.
Bioshock Infinite. Valiant from Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Lots of Final Fantasy shit.
Lots of Final Fantasy stuff.
Can I say that I love the idea of pirates in the sky? Sky pirates?
It's quite sexy.
You say that and you toss it away, Diggs, but listen, if Balthier and Fran from fucking Final Fantasy mm-hmm. weren't it for you, then I don't know what
I have
was.
No idea who that is.
Anyway, I don't want to talk about it. If Final Fantasy
no,
wasn't like
No, I think
like
you should talk about it.
If Final Fantasy wasn't a defining part of one's aesthetic awakening.
I wasn't allowed to play Final Fantasy because my mom saw what lightning looked like and said, that's not very Catholic.
That's not God. God is in the lightning. Oh, real fun lightning fact, real quick. Ben Franklin invented lightning rod, right? Beforehand, lightning struck churches all the goddamn time. They were the highest places in town.
And they got those metal crosses on
top. Yeah, those metal crosses on top. And they would fill them with gunpowder because they're like, nobody's going to look in the church for the gunpowder. So not only did they keep getting struck by lightning, but they also kept exploding. And the priests would like consecrate bells and be like, please, God, please, 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 do not hit this one.
Can you imagine given like a fire and brimstone speech, you're like a some sort of Puritan and then your church fucking explodes?
Yeah.
Like, what do you do?
I know. That's the thing. I am certain that that's why certain fire and brimstone religions were so prolific in the United States. Because they just kept on getting struck mid-sermon.
God, that's funny.
Like, multiple times. Imagine if you're the priest. I feel like...
You have to quit. Like, you have to become a prostitute then. You'd be like, well,
if your church gets struck by lightning twice, you instantly have to go from priest to prostitute. The priest to prostitute pipeline is really, really direct.
You keep the same outfit though.
And that's where that came from.
Yeah.
But boats in the sky.
Before we forget it, I think the school from Sky High also counts.
Okay, but is it a boat?
Well, it's on the TV tropes list.
Really? Okay. Okay. Big school. I like to think of my school as a boat. What is school but land boat? Big
question,
land boat.
Do you think spaceships count a la the Titanic in Doctor Who?
Absolutely. That is a sky boat.
Fuck yeah. She was hot.
Well.
She could absolutely get it.
Sky boat could get it.
That's what I have to say about that.
I feel like, I mean, especially why she could get it and why other, you know, sky boats can get it is because they're so fancy. They're rarely so fancy.
They're all glitzed out. Yeah.
They're all glitzed out because blimps were glitzed out, you know?
Yes. Yes, because they reference that time in history when we made flying a luxury and an event. And they don't reference the time now where we've made the fact that we can, against God's will, hurtle through the sky using magic metal and the favor of the sky spirals. We've taken that magical thing and reduced it down to no leg room and people breathing on me.
Yeah. Yeah. I got caught in airport because my plane smelled like gym socks and they said, you can't. Yeah, we all went onto the plane. They're like, man, this plane smells like gym socks. You all need to get off this stinky plane. I'm like, how? You realize we're in a modern Marvel, right? You
like, realize
this is the peak of human ingenuity. And
we made a magic box that can, like, teleport.
Exactly. And you couldn't check before we got on this plane to make sure it didn't smell like gym socks?
Yeah, like, I blame someone currently on it, not the magical bird.
Right, exactly. The magic bird just wants to fly. Just let him fly.
The magic bird did nothing wrong.
Fill it with hydrogen. Ugh. Fill it with hydrogen and then watch it go boom, Hindenburg style.
You know, every time I think about the Hindenburg, I think about in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and the Island of Misfit Toys, the blimp airship that the Toy Taker had and how he walked on the surface of it using those little spiked boots, despite the fact that that would definitely puncture the airship.
It would absolutely puncture the airship. Those things are... I can't believe they took hydrogen and said, let's fill it up. And then I can't believe the Toy Taker walked on top with spiky boots.
Yeah, he walked on top with spiky boots. Speaking of things that occupy my mind frequently, God. UFOs are also skyships.
Whoa.
Whoa.
They are unidentified flying objects that we presume to carry living things. Skyships.
Here's the thing. How do you know that they're ships and not beings? Just round little...
They could be beings.
Round little bleeping beings.
No, that's like a whole theory.
Really?
Is that like the crafts that we see are actually the beings themselves?
The sky whales?
Literally, yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
If you are Jonah, biblical Jonah, but in a sky whale. Well, then it's a spaceship again. And that's semantics. But
is a person who is pregnant on a plane not her own skyship?
Her own is a woman who is pregnant on a plane, in a submarine, in an elevator, not just an elevator, sky, submarine.
Is the elevator from Willy Wonka 2 a skyship?
Yes! Willy Wonka's elevator, canonically a skyship.
God.
Come aboard. It goes up and down and left and right and then launches people into space. It's a trebuchet, a skyship for your blood in your body. And then your body is the skyship.
Jeffrey Bezos thinks he's special, but he's not the first billionaire in space. It was Willy Wonka. It was William Wonka. Sorry, it's William Wonka?
It was Bilford Wonka.
And Billy Wonks.
Was the first billionaire in space. Billy the Billionaire. And he made it first.
You know why they call him Willy. Because he has an elevator that will go into space. Anyway. You're just really gonna let me sit in that joke, huh?
I wanted you to stew.
You were waiting for me to say the word penis.
No, I wasn't. I just wanted you... I wanted you to think long and hard about what you just said and stew in it a little bit. Maybe contemplate your crimes. I gave you time to repent, and yet you do nothing.
Well, if I repent and then I get hit by lightning, I have to become a prostitute. And I don't think I'm emotionally ready for that. They're a lot braver and stronger than I am, and I...
You're still in the minister phase.
The mind is willing, but the flesh is weak.
To become a good prostitute.
I want to put on my clerical collar and not have someone else take it off.
You want to take it off yourself.
Exactly.
Question.
Yeah.
If we, this is a bit of a circle back. If we launch, say, Bezos into space.
Against his will.
Against his will. Rich people trebuchet style.
Mm-hmm.
Then is he a skyship for his stomach or brain?
No. He is the first in what has been a long time coming.
He is the first victim of a long coming storm.
Look, if we sent innocent Lakia into space to die, we can send Jeffrey Bezos.
Honestly. Here's the thing. Okay. You know how, sorry to bring it back to cannibalism, but I'm never sorry to bring it back to cannibalism. you know how cannibalism did spike during the westward expansion? Just like proximity.
Yes. Ooh, I have a thing about this. Continue.
Yep. Well, so if every time we explore a dangerous new frontier, there is a spike in cannibalism, I say we let them explore space and then just sit back and watch them Hunger Games themselves, emphasis on the hunger, and then they can eat each other. I'm just saying, like, we don't need to eat the rich. We can let them eat themselves.
Annalie, I have great news.
What?
You know how in every recent century, in like the 20s, we've had a plague, and that was like a joke until like it happened.
Right.
And then right after the 20s, we have an economic collapse, which looks like where we're like headed towards.
Sure.
And then there's like a boom again, right? And that has happened in the 1800s, 1900s, right? Like it's coming back now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what there's always a boom of in the 40s?
What?
Cannibalism.
Yes.
1845.
Yes.
We have, 1845
party.
To 46, the Donner Party. 1846 to 47, we have the Lost Franklin Expedition.
Yep.
1945. I want to say, very end, 1945, we have the USS Indianapolis.
Yep. That's the
2046.
Yeah.
Give it to me.
That's the thing. There's always a spike in cannibalism every time
always.
We start sending a lot of people to a new place. Because,
yep.
You know, statistically, one of those groups of people is going to run out of food.
And one of the people on that party is going to have a great idea.
He's going to have a stellar idea.
Come on, guys.
Come on.
Only a couple more years.
A couple more years.
We've can hold on 20. For 24 years.
Yeah, I'll be mad that I don't get to do it, but I'll be happy that it'll be
Who's saying you won't?
Oh, do I get to go into
Every
space?
Every trip needs a journal keeper.
Man, I like the way you think. I'll be like the fake guide in the Donner Party being like, oh yeah, I know space.
Oh, I'm Langsford Hastings.
Space. Yeah.
I want to be Louis Kieseberg.
Who's that?
Louis Kieseberg was the last survivor of the Donner Party. Like, he was the last one to get rescued. Was the only member of the Donner Party to not only be accused of cannibalism, but be accused of murdering for the meat, and then went on to open an inn and restaurant in California.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, he, like, fully confessed to, like, the cannibalism for survival purposes, and he never fessed up to killing anyone, but he almost certainly killed Tamsin Donner.
God, yep.
The wife, yeah.
That's the thing. We love to glorify the Westward expansion. If you ever visit, like, a Westward graveyard, you realize it was a terrible fucking place to live.
It's real fucked up.
Bad place to be.
It's scary as shit.
Who is Airship?
This is here. You wrote the D&D campaign for this.
And listen, hey, I'm sorry that I haven't gotten around to doing it. Hey, if my potential Dungeons and Dragons party is listening to this, I apologize in advance. I just gotta do it.
Dungeons and Dragons party, clear a Friday.
Clear up a Friday. I'll commit to a Friday.
Yeah.
See, I love airships. I do love the aesthetic of airships.
Sexy.
Oh, they're so good.
They're sexy.
They are so.
This is definitely you.
And it's always like a little bit of steampunk, a little bit of like blimps, a little bit of like a little bit ritzy, a little bit cowboy.
Oh yeah, and it's always, you can't have airships without like an anti-capitalist like underlying message,
because it's always a little too ritzy, you know. Always a bit Hindenburg, a bit ritzy.
And of course, speaking of the Hindenburg, that brings us to our next trope. Which is, if it bleeds, it leads.
If it bleeds, it leads.
This is the trope that in news media, if a story involves like a brutal death or an injury or something like horrific happening, that's front page news. That leads.
Oh, yes.
So like a school shooting, an animal mauls someone, a gazelle is being eaten by lions in Times Square. That's your leading story. If it bleeds, it leads.
This trope is really fun because it opens up the door for another trope, which is predatory news reporter.
Yes, like Gale Weathers.
Yeah. There's always the, you know, person who follows the crime to take the picture. You know, there's always the person. Even War in Good Omens was, you know, a war news reporter. There's always like this kind of predatory aspect of people who are on the scene of the news.
Gil Carrillo he's not a like a news reporter. He's a police officer. This is a real guy. He got assigned to the Richard Ramirez, like the Night Stalker case.
Yeah.
And he was just like stoked out of his mind to be working on like a serial killer case. And so like when he talks about it like it's a fictional thing, despite the fact that he actually worked the case and kind of stirred it up while he was in there.
Yeah. This is side note, like the whole Columbine thing.
Oh, definitely Columbine. Definitely Columbine. The way we talk about Columbine, first of all, wrong.
Yeah. And the way that while it was happening, they had news reporters lying to family members to get the scoop, which is so, and that's the same thing with like the Black Dahlia. Like news reporters coming being like, oh, we've got this, we're gonna stir things up, we're gonna make things worse, essentially.
And then it whips around even now the other way of when you have an event at a school, for example like Parkland or something like that, and you have students who are taking videos and recording it, that then gets demonized when it is you know, these people are recording evidence, trying to get help, they are trying to help the situation, and it gets demonized in the same way as Gail Weathers putting her camera in your face and demanding a story right after your friend got murdered, right? Because there's a difference between, you know, first person on the field, Edward R. Murrow reporting, or like the guy on Mount St. Helens. You know who I'm talking about? Like, that's a different thing. Him and the kids apart, like, that's totally different than...
Right. Different than Freddie Lowndes from Hannibal.
Exactly. Yes.
Yep. Who goes in and is, you know, dishonest. But it's all about that scoop.
And meddling in the case you're reporting on.
Yeah.
Like, even in a lighter example, What's Her Fuck from Newsies.
Yeah.
She's actively engaging with the people she's reporting on.
Yeah. Like the you know, hungry young reporter wants to amp up the blood. How can we spin this?
If it bleeds, it leads.
And if it bleeds, it leads. There was the person who like went to crime scenes beforehand and like staged them to look worse than took photos.
O.J. Simpson.
Well.
Well, that was the other way they hid evidence, but,
Yeah. I feel like there is a story out there of somebody who is a reporter who is there for the scoop to make it bleed worse.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend whose mother was a journalist, and she's like, never do that again. Ever.
I was going to say, my mom also worked in television news. She worked as a cameraman and then like an editor.
No way. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For King 5.
I have a friend who edits currently for MSNBC.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And like, you know, during a lot of the craziness of like, you know, June 6th, she was
right.
editing there. And she was just like, I'm in a soup of turmoil because she was like editing the raw footage that made our headlines.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Hey guys, I don't know if you know this. The world's crazy right now. Listen to Genre Blind and, you know.
Take a break with us so we can talk about school shootings.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
No, but even on the other side of that, like some, cancel culture. A lot of times we make things worse than they would have been.
Oh,
like someone does something awful, but then the way we report on it makes
reductive.
It worse than it actually is. My favorite example of this is like the Logan Paul thing with Okigahara. The Japanese suicide forest.
Right.
He obviously not a thing that he should have done. Not a good thing there.
Mm-hmm.
But the way it got reported on made this situation infinitely worse.
Right.
In comparison to, literally, I think it was like 2 years previous, Tana Mojo, who is like another very kind of like similar genre YouTuber to Logan Paul with vlogs and the LA lifestyle and the whatever. She went on a beach trip with a friend and filmed a man who was going into like drug overdose essentially.
Oh.
And I'm pretty sure he ended up dying. It was like a whole thing. But that was before we had reached like terminal reporting on a thing.
Right.
So she got not as bad as she should have been, but punished for doing that thing without it skyrocketing her career like it did to Logan Paul.
Right. That's something, I mean, yada, 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 cancel culture. We as a society love the schadenfreude.
Oh, we live in a society?
We live in a society, but we love schadenfreude, and we love watching other people fall. Oh, it's delicious. Like,
it's fabulous.
Know, let's be honest, we love the tea.
Can you imagine how good it must have felt May 8th, 1945, to hear on the radio that Hitler shot himself?
Oh, yep.
To be like, yeah, you fucking bitch.
Yeah. I have never felt so, like, and this is highlighting the cruelty in myself, but you know what? I don't care. When I found out that Trump got COVID, I was like,
yes.
Oh, delicious. Oh,
I was in
so
a hotel
good.
Room in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Wearing a suit.
Mm-hmm. And it was...
Oh,
so good. And that's the thing. Like, listen. I don't love when bad things happen to people in my proximity, but I do love drama. I really do. Listen, everybody's like, I hate drama. I love drama. It doesn't happen a lot. I've got a lot of very, you know, reasonable friends and we talk about our issues. But whenever
drama... You love the hot goss.
I love the hot goss. I'm incredibly nosy. I just love it. I do. And listen, I genuinely like when it's resolved. I have a real want for things to be good for the people that I love. But I also just love hearing shit. Too.
Yeah.
I love it.
I like when things happen and I get to tell other people about them.
Right. It spices my day.
Oh, I just don't like drama. Bullshit. Drama's fun.
Tea is the spice of life.
Tea is the spice of life. Exactly.
That's why white people fought so many wars about it.
They needed that spice.
We did awful things so that we could tell other people about other awful things that other people are doing.
White people wrecked the earth so that we could be like, oh my god, white people wrecked the earth.
Oh my god, I know we just invaded India, but did you hear what France is doing?
Like,
oh,
so spicy.
God.
That's like the whole, like, Libels, you know? The fucking French Revolution Libels that were just like, oh my god.
Or do you remember when Napoleon wrote a letter to his brother about how he was worried his wife didn't love him anymore and the letter got intercepted by the prince?
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Fucking loser.
So good.
Small dicked bitch.
Oh my god. So good. All throughout human history, we're just like, oh, thank god it's not me.
Oh god.
Yeah.
But then also there's a whole culture of doing that, like, on purpose. Of like, make a scene so you get seen.
Oh
right?
My god. The whole no press is bad press.
Exactly. And like, here's the thing is, like, we even participate in that to, like, an extent. Like, I certainly do on TikTok of, like,
sure,
I'm gonna post something that I know is either gonna be absurd or controversial so that people interact with it.
Yeah, polarizing, sure.
And obviously nothing, like, harmful. I'm not Logan Paul.
No,
it's
yeah.
It's more of stuff being like, haha, I think the Titanic is sexy. So I get enough people in the comments section being like, OP, what?
Yeah, right.
Hello?
Right. Part of my show that I do at the Franklin is I say, is it water or wooder, because I'm in Philadelphia. People like yell
funny.
And they get like really into it. And that's the thing. Like I want people to nothing sparks passion like conflict.
I was a tour guide for a very brief period of time. And this was also in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And so I would always start it out with like, all right, like we have any Eagles fans, right?
Yep.
Like do it that way and be like,
yeah.
Lame. I'm a Cowboys fan myself. I'm not. I'm not actually a Cowboys fan.
Right?
It's just very funny.
It would make a lot of people really mad. And that's the thing. I mean, like, you know, Philly is no joke about their sports teams. They'll, like, riot and wreck things when they win. When they win.
Oh, my God.
Oh, what a grimy city I live in. My God.
God, it's brutal.
I realize I'm triangulating my location.
Well, you live in Canada.
Yeah, I was going to say.
In the Headless Valley.
In the Headless Valley of Canada.
It's called
the what?
It's called the Headless Valley.
Sorry, the what is it called? I can't hear you.
It's right next to Dead Man.
Right next to the. I'm sorry. I mean, Elle also did some shit like that too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, okay, like that's the point, right? Is that he's like literally on the same wavelength as light. Like that's
yeah.
the whole.
Oh, that's the whole point. That's why they're made to be in fisticuffs forever,
oh,
you know?
Forever. Hand in unlovable hand, and I hope you die!
I hope we both die.
Oh.
Oh my gosh. Listen, hey, anybody who's listening who ever thought that maybe they liked Death Note and then could leave it behind, you can't.
You're wrong.
It follows you forever.
It does. It follows you, and then every once in a while you remember it, and then you have to show it to someone else.
Yeah, it's like a virus. You never quite leave it behind.
It's like the Ring VHS.
Yeah. But great anime.
Great anime.
So, who is If It Bleeds, It Leaves?
This is probably me.
Yeah, this is probably you, I'm gonna be honest.
It's probably me. I've made more jokes about it.
Yeah, right. The thing is, I feel like just generally you follow the gore like a little moth to a flame.
I do. I keep a picture of a man's severed hand in my desk at work.
Hell yeah, you do.
But that's for professional reasons, not for...
Right, of course. You do study gore for a living a little bit.
I do, yeah. No, I make money studying and recreating gore.
Hey, Diggs, you ever figured that maybe you should be a horror writer or something like that?
Oh, that's a funny notion. I'd never considered that one before.
What an interesting...
prospect.
You really think I could do it?
I think that you might just have the gumption to do that.
Ah, I don't think so. I'm not built for it. My delicate sensibilities.
I don't have the stomach for none of that.
I thought Finding Nemo was a little scary, what with that barracuda.
Oh my goodness, I hated that. I turned it off right there.
Very scary.
I didn't even get to the part where they lost Nemo.
They did what?
I mean, anyway, what's the next trope?
The next trope is... This is how you can tell I really do use the random trope feature. The next trope is signature headgear.
Signature headgear?
So basically the distinctive headgear or a headgear that a character always wears and kind of identifies them. So like Jughead's crown or Taco's hat.
Oh, that's very good.
Yugi's headgear.
Hair. Hey, how dare you? How dare you invoke Yu-Gi-Oh! You card game hating, anime snubbing, childhood wrenching.
I've never snubbed anime.
I don't know. I seem to remember you making goddamn fun of Yu-Gi-Oh!
That's because it's a card game.
God damn it! God damn it. Were you Pokemon by chance?
I did. I played the Pokemon card game as a youth.
See, I did like a decent amount of Pokemon, but I was definitely more of a Yu-Gi-Oh person.
I was never allowed to play video games, but I was allowed to play the Pokemon card game.
Oh shit. Which one was your favorite Pokemon?
Torchic.
That's fair.
I don't know if that holds up anymore.
No, sure.
I like Snivy a lot now.
Yeah. I loved the Abra and then Kadabra and then Alakazam.
Oh, yeah, that's fun.
They were grand. They had spoons. Defining headgear.
Indiana Jones.
Oh, yes, the Indiana Jones hat. That is defining headgear, ain't it? Also, Jack Sparrow hat. Again,
Jack
people
Sparrow
get really,
hat.
You know, attached to their hats.
Yep, yep. Dustin's hat in Stranger Things.
Yeah. Remember in SpongeBob when they ripped off Kevin's hat? They're like,
fuck.
I never knew this thing was a hat. And then he's like, it wasn't. And it was literally just a part of his, like, skull.
Jesus fucking
that
Christ.
They wrenched off of his head.
Isn't Toad's, like, toadstool a hat?
Is it? No! It
I'm
can't
pretty
be.
Sure it's a hat.
It cannot be. I
Toad
will not allow this. Oh, no. Is he bald? Is he wearing a hat? Is this just a cultural thing?
Yeah.
I
have photos.
What does he look like underneath?
I have photos. I'll text them to you right now.
So bad. That is so bad.
Here you go. Toad is wearing a hat.
No. I don't know.
Toad's wearing a hat.
This. Oh no! He takes it off and he's got a little tuft of hair. Oh god.
There's also like not so much like signature headgear, but like for example, like the Monopoly Man always has his hat on. Like that's just like a part of the design.
Oh no, Diggs.
What did you see?
Diggs, are we gonna have to talk about how top hats are a little bit sexy?
Yeah, we are. So, ladies and gentlemen, and those who know better, Annalie has one main fetish, and that is a man with lots of ill-earned money in a top hat.
I hate my life, and I hate you, and I hate this podcast. This is
Andrew
my last genre
Andrew Carnegie, Rockefeller, the Monopoly Man. What's this fuck from Bioshock 2?
Oh, technically, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yes, Dr. Jekyll.
I just, like, listen, top
That's
hats.
Why she hangs out with me, because I'm slowly growing a Walt Disney mustache, and she knows a top hat is close to follow.
I feel like I need to murder these people, maybe is why I just feel this, like, incredible bloodlust around any top hats, and then...
But lust is part of bloodlust.
I was gonna say, and then the wires get crossed somewhere.
I would like to hear how is it you think about top hats?
Well, so here, I hate that I'm on the spot for this. Usually I do the bedwebby heads. So I think of it more kind of like a carnival barker sort of thing. In that, like, you know how carnival barkers can usually flip around a top hat sort of thing?
Yes.
It's a show of showmanship. It's a performative wealth that is either mocked by the poor or adorned by the rich. It's just this interesting status symbol of fancy. I just think they're neat. Listen, I would love to have one to flip around myself.
When are we gonna fully reenact that one song from The Greatest Showman?
Listen, you know when the movie starts out?
I do.
And he's behind stage and he says,
ladies and gents, this is the moment you've waited for.
He's
got his, like, cane and top hat, and he's just, like, striking poses backstage.
I do know.
I know you know.
It's your top, it's your number one thing.
I just that think gets top you hats so are right. interesting. I just think they're grand. They're just fun. I just think they're fun. I hate this, by the way.
You just think they're neat.
I just think they're neat. Aren't they fun, though?
They're quite fun. And yeah. I love that you finally are admitting to a thing after all the things I've admitted to.
Listen, I don't have a... it's not like a like an across-the-board thing.
It's pretty across-the-board.
It doesn't hurt your chances.
You heard it here first, listeners. If you have an interest in Annalise, step one is acquiring a top hat and learning to flip it. Step two is having a disposable income. Step three is getting murdered.
It really is. You know, passion can be a murderous rage. And sometimes it indicates interest, right?
Yeah, it's what I want xenomorphs to do to me.
Right, exactly. The thing is, I do hate wealth. Just outward displays of wealth in general.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's all. And
period.
You know, if you want to attract my ire, just, like, flaunt your wealth. And then I'll be like, okay, time to kill him.
My aunt gave me $25 for my birthday, but it arrived significantly after my birthday, so it was like I got $25 out of nowhere.
Oh, shit. That's the universe giving you $25.
That's my... display of wealth.
Oh, shit. Now I'm getting all hot and bothered.
$25 from my Aunt Kathy, who I love so very much, and she's my only family member who I let read my romance novel.
Aw, the best.
And then she immediately betrayed me and told my mom about the sex in it.
Oh, no. See, that's no good. Hey, listen, all I'm saying is the person in your fantasy novel was also wealthy, yeah?
Yeah, he was an incredibly wealthy businessman.
Yeah, so, like, hey, listen.
Does Isaac Astor do it for you?
Well, no, here's the thing. All I'm trying to say is...
No, hello. Back it up. Does he do it for you?
Listen, I haven't read enough of your fantasy novel to know heads from tails, but I would
I'll send
to
you the
say,
PDF.
Hello, Pot. My name is Kettle. This is very much so the pot calling the kettle black. This is me saying, hello, Diggs.
Hi, I'm Diggs.
I love that you found what you presume is my thing.
Perry the Platypus has a distinctive hat.
Perry the Platypus does have it. I love the change of subject, but this is all great. Perry the Platypus does have a distinctive hat. I guess, you know, the king from SpongeBob? You know, the...
Oh, Triton?
Yes. The Micro?
Yes.
Always good. Always
Applejack
good.
From My Little Pony?
Well, I'm not a brony. I'm not a nerd, Diggs. I'm sorry.
Timmy from Fairly Odd Parents.
He does have a hat, doesn't he? Wow.
And it's like a big thing.
Wow. Yeah, I guess you're right. Wirt has a little pointy cone upon his head.
Would you count Tucker from Danny Phantom?
Again, this is getting into cartoon things, which they all do have, like, distinctive headgear, but that's because they don't change their costumes, you know?
That's very true.
And absolutely, yes, Tucker wears the same hat again and again, but...
But only Timmy makes a big deal out of it.
It's not so much like a thing with a capital T-H.
What about the Sherlock Holmes deerstalker that's never in any piece of Sherlock Holmes media, but is inexplicably linked to the man?
Yeah, he's always wearing a deerstalker. It's always him and a deerstalker, Watson, in the bowler hat or top hat.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. That's like a distinctive piece of headgear.
Despite it not, they should just show him doing coke.
Do they mention it in the books? I've read like a decent amount of like
in the books. Yeah, he does like a bunch of drugs.
No,
like,
no. I'm not talking
stuff.
About coke. I'm talking about the deerstalker.
Oh no, it's not in the books.
That's what I thought because I've read like a decent amount of like OG Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, no, he does not.
He does not have a deerstalker.
No.
That's just like, you know, the Berenstain Bears versus the Berenstain Bears, right?
Yeah.
I love when people have like a thing. Like I never take off my over the shoulder bag, like my satchel. Mm-hmm. People call it. I never take it off, even when
you
I'm
don't.
In houses. The amount of times that people have been like, hey, take your bag off and stay a while. And I'm like, this is my comfort bag. Don't ask me to take my strap off.
That's part of your body.
It's a part of my body. So much so that like people have drawn pictures of me and drawn the bag as like the defining characteristic of my stick figure.
I really do think green ribbon style, if you take it off, your body will just like cut itself in half.
We'll slice in two.
Yeah.
It's because I I don't have very good object permanence.
I know this. So you have to keep your bag.
And so I have to keep my bag.
All your sense is stored in it.
Exactly. Find weird things in bag. Crucifix, owl statue, little bit of holy water.
Stolen rock from the circle in the woods.
Lots of rocks do make their way into bag. One of them was stolen at one point from creepy rock circle in woods.
That we then had to fix.
I wonder what would have happened if we didn't fix it.
Probably, I don't think the pandemic would have happened.
Oh no, did I cause the pandemic by removing the rock?
Yes.
Damn it.
We got him.
Although, I've got my satchel. You've got your skunk stripe. That's like a deliberate head choice.
I made a head choice.
You've got your Frankenstein lightning stripe.
Excuse me, it's a reference to the Tower of Terror.
Tower of Terror, Frankenstein.
Sweeney Todd, Jason Todd.
A lot of different iterations of John Sims.
Yeah, Jonathan Sims. Elias also has it.
Any magic lads with the stripe in hair.
Yeah. Some people will draw Harry Potter with his scar like continuing up into his hair, so like that part is white. I've seen that a couple of times. Percy Jackson.
So who is this?
I mean, if we're going by head, it's me. If we're going by like item, because it's like headgear. If we're going by item, it's you.
Yeah.
I think this is shared.
I feel like it's split 50-50.
Yeah.
I've got the item. You've got the noggin.
Head.
Exactly. Do we have time for one more? One more little cheeky little...
We have time for one more.
One more little cheeky peek?
We definitely have one more.
Especially because I'm going to edit out most of that top hat shit, so...
No, you're not.
I am God.
No, because I will get your audio and edit it and clip it back in when I upload it.
Back in the driver's seat. Annalie's back in the driver's seat. Annalie edits now.
I control the anchor account.
Diggs gets villain arc again. I give Diggs villain edit because I am God.
Yeah. Yeah, notice how on the last two episodes, Annalie got a little more exposed.
Never, not me. No.
Because I had control, and now I just get to be homosexual supporting cast who controls the anchor account and can always go back in and edit episodes even after they've come out.
Listen, there's a reason why I compartmentalize like Jekyll. We've got this on lock. I must be in control.
Except when you're not, and you hand off all your faculties to a short, angry, debaucherous man.
It's true. Remember when I gave you an episode of Genre Blind? You went in and you made an edit that made you sound like Bill Cipher?
Yeah.
Ultimate betrayal.
Yeah. I did make myself sound like Bill Cipher.
Yeah, you're like, I'm gonna fiddle with this shit.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, do you mind editing it so like it has the effect? And you're like, yeah. And then didn't. And I'm like, nah, I got you. Don't even worry.
Nah, don't worry, I got this.
Don't worry, I did it.
And that's the thing. Every once in a while, there'll be a surprise, and I'll be like, weird.
Hold on.
You broke my baby. But it actually makes it better.
Well, every time I have to crack it in half.
You take it and you snap it over your goddamn knee.
I role play that I am the iceberg who sank the Titanic every 2 weeks.
Does that make you very happy?
Do I make you horny, baby?
Does it make you horny, baby?
Do I make you randy? So the last trope for this evening's episode is saved by canon. So this is the principle that simply based on like a piece of media being a prequel or knowing that like there is already released content that takes place afterwards, nothing bad can happen to a character. So like, you know, Yoda can't die during the prequels because the original trilogy is already out.
Right.
Or like
the reverse
being, you know, Padme's not gonna survive the prequels because the original trilogy is already out.
Interesting. Yeah.
This is also popular in like historical fiction.
Yeah.
So like, for example, like if you pull Hamilton,
sure,
you know, in the Battle of Yorktown, Alexander Hamilton is not going to die.
Yeah.
Because he gets shot and murdered in Weehawken later.
You know who survives, you know who doesn't, and spoilers don't exist for history.
Unless it's alternate history. So like if you do like Inglourious Basterds.
Sure. That was one of my favorite bits of Inglourious Basterds.
That was like, so excellent.
Oh no, I know how this ends. ends, and they're like, just fucking kidding, you super don't know how this ends.
It's actually gonna end great.
I'm like, really? They're gonna have like a last minute escape like a goddamn like hero in an action film? Really? And they're like, no.
We're just gonna murder him right here. We're just gonna murder him. And you're gonna love it.
Yeah. I also love the whole idea when people do timelines in fiction and they're like, well, we know that this is going to happen and we can't interrupt, so we are going to we're going to keep this untouched.
Right.
Like, it's big in Doctor Who, but it's also big in, you know, any time there is like a divine prophecy going over things.
Right. Or just like these are events that can't be changed, or this is a main timeline.
Right. Right?
Like you're Back to the Future, like.
Right. I love the respect of, no, this is the linear path that things take. We can fiddle around minorly, but we're not gonna really mess things up.
Mm-hmm. That paired with then like the Prisoner of Azkaban thing of like, you were always meant to meddle, mm-hmm. so every single time you have to meddle. So like the fires of Pompeii with Doctor Who,
yep.
of every single time he's going to have to go and explode Mount Vesuvius.
It is an excellent decision story-wise, mm-hmm. to make things circle back and forcing people to be a part of a prophecy that they didn't,
yes.
want to be a part of.
Yes.
When they sneak that in, I'm like, oh, you know how to write a good story.
Yeah.
Like, especially when they know from the beginning and it's not obvious that they're going to fulfill it, and then it happens. I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, yep, that's good storytelling.
It's so nice.
It's so nice.
Which I'm about to say maybe the most controversial thing I've ever said.
Mm-hmm.
There is one part of Cursed Child that, mm-hmm. I think is really good.
What is
and
it?
It's the bit where Harry has to go and pretend to be you know who.
Oh, shit.
Which, yeah. look, all of Cursed Child is not good. And
sure, fucking dumb.
And J.K. Rowling, and it technically even wasn't her. It was Jack Tiffany and, like, what's a spot? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but let's not make blanket statements about things. Like, things can be good and bad, and we can hold space for both of things.
Yeah.
You know?
That scene, that and actually what happened with Malfoy, actually, I was very vindicating.
Mm.
That scene where Harry, like, makes, like, 'cause there's, like, a discussion amongst them of, like, who's gonna have to go do this? And Harry's like, no, like, I have to. Like,
right.
I've lived this.
Yeah, that's the unwitting fulfiller of a prophecy.
Yeah.
Is so good. But also, you know, knowing how things are going to end.
Again, neither of us believe in spoilers.
Yeah.
Right? The human brain likes things better when it knows what's going to happen. And while there is some value in, like, going in to watch The Sixth Sense and
right,
knowing nothing about
Shyamalan's.
It. Right, there's definitely value in doing that. There's also value in the wait for it.
And I feel like specifically in prequels, specifically in movies where you know what's going to happen at the end, a
mm-hmm.
lot of the fun isn't knowing what's going to happen. It's how it's going to happen. It's very much
yes.
like a literal the joy is in the journey sort of thing.
Yes. It's the how and it's the dread.
I love watching main characters die. I know that sucks, but I just
appreciate
it.
No, I do as well.
It. Yeah.
I do like, and I know you're in the same boat of like, I like watching them die in a narratively satisfying way.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that this trope is probably you.
Saved by Canon?
Yeah, here's the thing. I've been trying to kill you for years.
You have been.
But something, like, keeps blocking me from my incredibly effective murdering tactics. I keep really trying to get you. This is like a Tom and Jerry sort of thing.
Oh,
I'll
yeah.
be, like, waiting around a corner with a sledgehammer, and you just, like, I don't know, miraculously escape.
Well, I was actually coming around the other corner, and that was your own tail. Coming towards you.
Listen, that's all well and good. This is fine, but I didn't get to smash, and that's the issue.
You did. You got to smash your own tail.
It was very comical. I turned bright red.
And your tail, like, glowed and, like,
yeah,
pulsated
yeah.
for a bit.
And for some reason, you've got plot armor.
I do.
Until the day that I do kill you.
And it'll be very satisfying for everybody involved.
Oh my god.
It'll be fabulous.
Can I say the payoff is gonna be huge? One day, I'm gonna come on Genre Blind and be like, ding dong, the witch is dead.
Good evening.
Good evening. Yeah. Okay, let me give this a shot. Okay.
Yeah, hit me.
Good evening to only those who know that the boiling point of liquid nitrogen is -320 degrees Fahrenheit. Every episode, we use the random trope feature on TB Tropes to start the... See, I can't even...
even do it without you.
You are contractually obligated to follow us on Instagram at genreblindpodcast or us individually at MomentumMortSafe or at AnnieDTR on both Instagram and TikTok. Please subscribe to our podcast, like, comment, and review. It does help us a lot. And we wanted to extend a special thank you to Fiona, who is a listener. Who became a monthly donor. That's not something we ever ask for, but it's something we really appreciate. So thank you, Fiona, for doing that. And if you hit us up at genreblindpodcast@gmail.com and have any specific like requests or anything like that, please hit us up. We'd be happy. Please.
We will do a trope for you. I will draw a doodle for you. Like, whatever you want. Like, we don't have a reward system.
No,
but we
because we
give
didn't
you
think
presents.
People would give us money.
Exactly. We want to give you a gift.
Yeah, we'll present you with something. Even if you just hit us with the email, surprise me, we'll hit you back with something fun.
Oh, we'll hit you back with something.
So thank you, Fiona, and listeners also thank Fiona, who didn't give us their at. But Fiona, vibes.
We send positive vibes to Fiona.
Yeah, thank you, Fiona. Those are the places you can find us. The email is in the description.
Send us any spare himbos. Send us cool facts. We love the interaction, DILFs. Genuinely. Did you say send us DILFs?
I most certainly did not. So thank you for listening to Genre Blind Podcast. We'll see you in the next episode. In the meantime, I want to talk about the Mystery Flesh Pit National Park. I've spent a lot of time thinking about how best I can interact with this flesh.